this is the first time I've been out in a canoe since I saw the American tragedy.
Oh, you're perfectly safe, Professor, in this boat.
I don't know. I was going to get a flat bottom, but the girl at the boathouse didn't have one.
Well, you know, Professor, I could go on like this, drifting and dreaming forever. What a day. Spring in the air.
Oh, me? I should spring in the air and fall on the lake?
Oh, Professor, you're full of whimsy.
Can you notice it from there? I'm always that way after I eat radishes.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of True Stories of Tinseltown. And today is second episode of the series of History of Blonde Bombshells. And we did Jean last week. This week is the lovely and tragic Thelma Todd. And of course, on this show is the wonderful April Vivier, who is a classic movie historian and a classic blonde historian and blonde bombshell expert. So thanks, April, for being here. I had so much fun last week, and we'll be talking about the Thelma.
Oh, thanks for having me, Grace. I'm super excited. We can dive right in.
Yay. Okay, so here we go.
You know, a lot of people know her as the ice cream blonde.
And Hot Toddy.
And Hot Toddy, although Thelma did not like that nickname.
Yes, I've been reading so much about her and reading. I mean, I read a whole book about her death. And this is mostly what we're going to be talking about is Thelma's time, you know, the most. I don't know that she would be remembered as well had it not been for her early death, which is terrible to say, but that's what I think. I could be wrong.
I mean, you know, a lot of these blondes, as we're discussing them, they have really tragic ends.
I know. So, I was thinking that. I was telling my friend that we're talking about them, and geez, do blondes have more fun? I don't know. Certainly not in classic Hollywood.
Yeah, no, there seems to be more of a, you know, like classic blonde curse for having fun. But, you know, we get to enjoy their movies, and they've, you know, gone down in history. So
I love them all. Okay, so why don't you start us going?
So Thelma was born in Lawrence, Massachusetts on July 29th, so her birthday's coming up soon, 1906. She was the second child of her parents. Unfortunately, her brother, who had been born in 1903, died when he was only 7 years old, in 1910, due to a machinery accident. Thelma reportedly witnessed it, and it really scarred her for life.
I can't even imagine.
But, you know, Thelma got through it, you know, and she went to high school. She was always noted as being a very pretty girl, even though she was prone to gaining weight, which, of course, in Hollywood was frowned upon. In high school, she actually was the reporter for all of the high school gossip for the school paper.
How cool.
And basically her own Luella Parsons.
I bet she wasn't that mean, though. She would have gotten in rumbles with the gossipees as the gossiper.
Yeah, no, I can't see. Thelma was a very kind person. Everyone would, you know, talk about that, you know, after she passed away. But that's what she did in high school. She soon started entering pageants, and she was actually, you know, awarded the Miss Massachusetts title.
For Miss America?
It was slightly before Miss America, but it was like the pageantry that would later become Miss America. And that was around 1924-ish. Mm-hmm. You know, so of course she's making the circuit as Miss Massachusetts, and she is discovered by Jesse Lasky of Lasky Players. And because of this, she is signed to Paramount. So Thelma is actually one of only 24 people, 12 men and 12 women, who went to the Paramount College in Astoria, New York. And the idea was that these, you know, 24 kids, I mean, they're basically kids, would become, you know, the future stars of America. But they would also teach them directing and lighting and just everything behind, you know, the movie business.
Sword fighting.
Fencing. Yeah.
I never really got that, but they do that at all the acting schools. On guard.
They do.
Yeah.
And, yeah, fencing was a very popular thing, although, you know, I mean, I guess at this time they do have some fencing epics, you know, and Errol Flynn's going to come off, you know, and like start doing Robin Hood. But yeah, they do fencing and they do all the back stuff. And, you know, these were going to be the future, you know, the future of Hollywood was in these 24 kids. Obviously, it did not go well because the Paramount School only produced one batch of graduates. So they graduated on March 2nd, 1926, after only 6 months at the Paramount College. And 8 of them dropped off. Only 16 actually graduated. And they had a huge, you know, ceremony at the Ritz-Carlton in New York. And these were the, you know, future, you know, movers and shakers of Hollywood. But surprisingly, only Thelma got a good contract out of it. The other 15 only got contracts with Paramount that lasted a year, but Thelma was actually signed to a 5-year contract starting at $75 a week, which was extremely good money, especially for a single woman in 1926. Shockingly, Thelma was not set on Hollywood. She actually considered becoming a school teacher, and at this point Thelma had really long hair that was down to like the middle of her back.
A lot of them did then. They had that really long hair that they either tied up. Oh, but then the flappers were coming. A lot of people were bobbing their hair as well. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, you're totally fine. You know, so Thelma wasn't set on it, although, you know, thanks to her Paramount contract, if she lasted the full 5 years, she would have been paid $500 a week. So Thelma ends up going on tour. They have the Paramount College graduates make a movie called Fascinating Youth, and they have to have a, you know, 13-week promotional tour with this movie. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Thelma's dad passes away a few weeks within the tour. So Thelma pulls out and she goes back to New York and she mourns her dad, obviously, with her mother. That, you know, short time didn't really affect her. She still continued to work for Paramount. She put her teaching, you know, dreams and career aspirations on hold. And then in February of 1928, her contract was purchased by First National Pictures. Now, First National was kind of like a B studio, although they did make, you know, some popular movies, but they weren't one of, you know, the big six.
The Grand Poobahs, yeah.
Yeah. They, you know, did some little independent productions. And Thelma discovered there that she was a gifted comedian. Surprisingly, tying back to last week's blonde bombshell, there were talks for Thelma to have the Jean Harlow role in Hell's Angels. Unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, Thelma obviously did not get the part, but she was on set, you know, for a while for that. Finally, in April of 1929, First National sells her contract to Hal Roach, and of course, this is a match made in comedy heaven. Thelma, you know, is in some Laurel and Hardy shorts. She, you know, Hal Roach loans her out to the Marx Brothers, and she really discovers that comedy is her forte.
She was also teamed first with Zazu Pitts, and then second, Patsy Kelly, and she did tons of shorts, right?
She did, and they actually just released the complete Patsy Kelly and Thelma Todd shorts collection not too long ago, which people can find on Amazon. And I have a friend, James Niebuhr, who released a book or is releasing a book, I can't quite remember, on Thelma and Patsy Kelly. And I would highly recommend that. All of James' books are great. And the idea behind her teaming with Zazu and eventually Patsy is that they are going to be like the Laurel and Hardy of women.
Yes.
With Zazu, Thelma is obviously kind of more straight-laced. She's more of the straight man in it. Whereas with Patsy Kelly, she's kind of dreamy, and Patsy has to continuously pull her down to earth. But it did show that, you know, Thelma was able to be both the straight man and, you know, the comedic one.
She had a lot of versatility.
She was, and it's very difficult for, you know, certain comedians to cross over, but Thelma was able to do it, and obviously she was very successful in it. In 1931, Thelma met Roland West, who was directing her movie called Coarse Air. Roland West will obviously feature pretty prominently
big time later. Yeah,
but you know, Roland discovers that he is falling in love with his leading lady, which is a bit of an issue because he's married to a former actress named Jewel Carmen.
Is Thelma married at that time to that Pat?
No, Pat's going to come a little bit later.
Oh.
So Roland decides to take a cruise with Jewel in order to get over Thelma Todd. And then, as you have just brought up, she's going with Pat. Is it DeSico? DeSico?
DeSico.
DeSico, okay. So, I will restart that. So, as you brought up, she starts going with Pat DeSico in spring of 1932. Now, Pat had come out to Hollywood, you know, working, and his idea was that he would be an agent for people and he was going to make his own money. There's talks of him having some mob connections and being a little seedy. He, you know, ended up owning some nightclubs and stuff like that. But for right now, he's just kind of trying to build himself up. Most people would remember that he was married to Gloria Vanderbilt for a while, who sadly just passed away. And that is obviously Anderson Cooper's mother. Mm-hmm. So, after a whirlwind romance, on July 10th of 1932, Thelma and Pat fly to Prescott, Arizona, and they get married. And people are pretty surprised by this. You know, Pat's kind of a serious guy, you know, and all this stuff. And, of course, she's not.
She's like lively, life of the party kind of gal.
Yeah. And so it's just kind of, you know, and people are looking at Pat like, hey, this guy's kind of seedy. You know, how are we feeling about him? But she, you know, ends up going with him. And the press starts, you know, pretty quickly saying, hey, you know, this isn't going to work out. Thelma's defending her choices and her marriage. And it kind of starts to show cracks fairly early.
I can't imagine having all that press on you saying, you know, you stink. Thelma's going to dump you soon enough. You don't belong with her. You know, I can see how that would bother you.
Yeah. And Thelma would say that Pat was cold. Of course, Gloria, when she, after she divorced Pat, would say that he was abusive.
Yes.
There are reports that he cheated on Thelma quite a bit, but Thelma being, you know, a lady and everything, did not talk about that with the press or even in divorce court. She just said he was cold and the marriage wasn't going to work out. But getting a little ahead of myself. In February of 1934, after, you know, just over a year, they decide to separate. So, you know, well, I should say after like a year and a half, they decide to separate. And then on March 2nd, they finally file for divorce. Thelma, it's kind of hard to gauge her feelings on this, but Thelma probably, you know, was hurt. She said that she never even got to meet Pat's parents, who lived in Long Island. So she, you know, kind of keeps going, and she goes out a little bit, but she's very, you know, quickly reunited with Roland West, who has decided that he absolutely loves her. It's been, you know, almost 4 years since he last saw her. He knows that it's not going to work out with Jewel Carmen. And so they kind of start dating. And as we brought up earlier, around this time is when Thelma starts making her shorts with Patsy Kelly.
Patsy was a riot. I liked her too.
She was. Patsy is a very, I wish she was a blonde.
We could talk about her another time because she is interesting. I loved her in Rosemary's Baby as Max. Loved her.
Yeah. Patsy definitely lived life on her own terms. She was one of the few people who was openly, you know, homosexual back in the day. She didn't apologize for it. She didn't let studios, you know, dictate that she should go on studio arranged dates. You know, if she was asked about anything, she was pretty blunt about it, which, of course, it was so taboo back then.
Big time taboo.
But, you know, she lived life by her own, you know, rules, and she was really, you know, she and Thelma had a really great friendship, and I think a lot of it was because Patsy would do what she wanted, and Thelma would too, but not to the extent that Patsy would. So during this time, Thelma's living situation's kind of, you know, vastly, but she's mostly living with her mother. Her mother's name is Alice, and Thelma absolutely loved her mother. She would talk to her almost every single day if she didn't see her. They shared an apartment together for, you know, a very long time in various houses, and she absolutely, you know, loved her mom, which kind of, you know, will tie into her death stuff. But at this point, just looking at her public image, she's very popular with the public. She's looked at as a gifted comedian. She has worked with, you know, Laurel and Hardy and Charlie Chaplin and the Marx Brothers, and her movies are successful.
The one I love, she did Claire Beau, Call Her Savage, and she got into one of the greatest cat fights. I mean, she was so good in that. Did you see that movie?
I have. No, she's definitely, she brings something to it, and it's hard to outshine Clara.
Yeah.
I think Thelma's able to do it.
Yes, and that scene, she was amazing.
Yeah, no, she really wasn't. During this time, she is trying to get into some dramatic parts. Corsair was obviously a dramatic movie, but she does try here and there to, you know, do some dramatic films. But the public doesn't take to that. And I think that's something really important to think about, especially as we progress through, you know, our series that we're doing, is how the public doesn't really want a smart, dumb blonde. And, you know, we think of that as being, you know, really exemplified in the 1950s, but it really starts in the 1930s. People want their dumb blondes to be, you know,
comedic.
Either they want them to be comedic, or they want them to be sexual bimbos.
Yeah.
There's no other way to describe it. They want them to just be, you know, dying to have sex with every man they meet. And, you know, Thelma obviously fell into the comedic aspect of, but, you know, people just, when she would try to go outside of that, people just would not take to her. So she learned pretty, you know, quickly, like she could dally here and there with dramatic things. But at the end of the day, comedy was her forte. And I think she was happy with it. She didn't have, you know, the feelings like Monroe did about her artistry being squandered or anything.
Having to go to the actor's studio and all that junk.
Thelma doesn't look at things like that. She just looks at, like, hey, I'm a comedian, that's what I'm good at, that was what the public is going to pay to see. And that is kind of refreshing to us.
Yes, and it's hard to do. It's hard to make an audience laugh, and a lot of people, you know, don't like funny women. You know, they're like, women aren't funny. Or same as, like, if you go to comics today, Jerry Lewis said, women aren't funny, women can't be funny, or something like that. So at that time, they loved her, and they certainly thought she was funny, and she was.
She was. She was definitely talented, and I think that, you know, it's a really great point to bring up how women weren't looked at as being, like, capable comedians, and that really has transferred over even until today. We're obviously starting to get away from that quite a bit now, mm-hmm. but it was a long-held belief for quite a bit. You very rarely saw women doing stand-up. It was, you know, very male-dominated mm-hmm. industry. Not to say women didn't do stand-up, as you know, Grace. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, even today when you look at, you know, the comedy specials that are on Netflix and HBO and stuff like that, most of them are done by, you know, male stand-up comedians.
Yeah, but they get a couple of the women in there, like, I don't know, couple. Which couple. Is better than nothing.
No, it is. And I think that really shows how much we have progressed, you know, when we're viewing women in comedy. But sorry, kind of went off on a tangent there.
I want to ask you one thing. I read that Thelma had a tendency to put on weight. And in her contract, it was strongly stipulated that she could not gain 5 pounds. If she did, she was out of there. Is that
yes,
true?
Thelma did have a very, you know, sadly for her, she did have a predisposition to gain weight very easily. In fact, when she was on tour for Fascinating Youth, one newspaper commented that luckily she had lost weight since filming. When they saw her in person, they saw that she was slender. But on screen, at least, you know, this newspaper person, she looked fat, which I think anyone who looks at Thelma wouldn't think she's fat today. But, you know, when you're around a bunch of women who are 5 feet tall and, you know, have 20-inch waist, someone like Thelma is going to look chunkier compared to that.
That's terrible. She never looked chunky to me.
I don't want anyone to think I'm saying that she's fat.
I know, but I'm saying they said she was. And I read that she started to turn to diet pills to keep her weight down. Is that true?
You know, there are multiple accounts that she was using diet pills. I would not be surprised. Mm-hmm. Diet pills were very commonly used, and they tended to be a type of amphetamine so that these women and men, because men were forced to take them as well, would be able to work, you know, 16, 18-hour days, only sleep for a couple hours, you know, with the help of a sleeping pill, and then they wake back up and they're given another amphetamine, which is going to keep them up and stop them from wanting to eat.
Yeah.
I think the most famous example of this is probably Judy Garland.
Yeah. They did to her so young, too. I mean, she, that was awful.
Yeah, Judy was started on that really, you know, when she starts doing The Wizard of Oz is when it really kicks in. You know, she has to have her breasts bound because she's supposed to look younger than she actually was. Mm-hmm. And they're putting her on a ton of diet pills so that, you know, she stays little.
And they make you crazy, those pills. It's like taking 50 cups of coffee or something if you're more susceptible to it. Someone gave me once, I wanted to go on diet. I wasn't at all heavy, but I was a teenager. And they gave me a diet pill. I felt like I was going to die. It was the worst feeling in the world for me. And never again. It was just, they just make you crazy.
They do, and the main thing that people forget with diet pills is that, you know, as you said, they make you crazy. They get you really wired and buzzed and stuff like that. And what ends up happening is that people have to take sleeping pills in order to stop it. And so what happens is the studio gets these women, and like I said, also men, gets their stars, I should say, on habits of, you know, taking amphetamine, it's going to keep your weight down, it's going to allow you to work for 20 hours straight, and then you're going to take a sleeping pill for 4 hours, and then we're going to give you an amphetamine to wake up, and then we're going to give you another one in the middle of the day, and it just becomes this huge cycle. And unfortunately for a lot of them, you know, a lot of these stars, especially women, and most notably Judy Garland, it ends up killing them because they get used to this cycle of having to take a bunch of pills.
Yeah, because after a while, you have to keep building up because your body is getting used to the amount you're taking, so you have to take more and more and more to get the effect you want.
Exactly. There's nothing to suggest that Thelma was at, like, deeply in the throes of addiction when she died, but it is very possible that she could have ended up like that as her career progressed. And as most older women know, you start to, you know, more easily gain weight the older you get. I know I have dealt with that.
It is easier. Yeah, but for poor Thelma, I know she drank a lot, They said that she started drinking a lot.
She did. Thelma did have a bit of an alcohol issue, which obviously, because I know pretty soon we're going to go into Thelma's death, we will talk about her drinking because that is severely connected mm-hmm. with that. But yes, Thelma did drink a lot. She probably hid some of her alcoholism. You know, she was somebody who overdid it quite a bit when she would go out to events. And the main thing with it is that she would always have, you know, a drink in her hand, and she's socializing, you know, as she goes from table to table at different restaurants. And she falls into a pattern of, you know, becoming a social alcoholic, and it doesn't go well. The thing with Thelma is Thelma was always somebody who liked to go out and have a good time.
But they called her a party girl. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, one of her main concerns with, or I shouldn't say concerns, but one of her main gripes with the Paramount College was that they had her in bed between, you know, like 9 and 10. And she wanted to be up until 4 in the morning dancing.
Yeah, go out to Manhattan and boogie down.
Yeah, and she wasn't able to do that, and she more than made up for it once she, you know, was able to express her freedom. But she did keep herself grounded, too. She frequently expressed homesickness for, you know, Lawrence. She was in touch with all of her cousins, and obviously she was extremely close to her mother.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw a picture of her cousins, and she was like, they were so proud of her. And they said that she didn't change. She wasn't high-hatting them. I love that expression. She was just Thelma. She was just Thelma.
She was, and that's a main thing that you will see if you ever, you know, pick up a book on Thelma. Well, I should say a reputable book on Thelma. You will read how she was always, you know, very down to earth, a very happy person, very nice person. And again, you know, we can tie that back to theories about her death. But Thelma was just a very nice person in Hollywood,
which is rare.
It is, and I think she is somebody that anyone would want to be friends with.
Yeah, because a lot of people, they'll be your friend, but they're kind of like, talk about you behind your back, just like in real life. You don't have to be an actor or an actress to do it, but I think more so in Hollywood.
Most definitely. So I guess from here, you know, that's basically a rundown on Thelma's career, you know, and her personality. I would say she's a nice person. She's a successful comedian. But Thelma does know that this is eventually going to come to an end. So with the help of Roland West, she, you know, gets involved with Thelma Todd's, oh my gosh, I can't think of the name.
Sidewalk Cafe.
Thank you. With the help of Roland West, she, you know, becomes an investor in Thelma Todd's Sidewalk Cafe, which is actually still standing. People can go see it. It is off of Santa Monica Boulevard, if I am remembering correctly. And it's up in the hillside. It's a very pretty little white building. And Thelma moves into the second level apartment that is right above the cafe. And then Roland West has a house that's a couple hundred yards back into the east of the cafe. People think that it is directly behind Thelma's Sidewalk Cafe, but is actually a little bit to the east of it. So Thelma is very, you know, she's very smart. I think that's one thing that, you know, you have to give her. She's really smart. She knows the Hollywood thing isn't going to last forever. She knows, you know, that she can't always coast by on the fact, you know, that she's pretty and she's funny. So she gets invested in this, and this is in 1935. And she gets more serious with Roland West, who, while he has his house back there, that's actually where, you know, Jule Carmen, on paper at least, is living. But he was most likely spending a lot of time in Thelma's apartment, which was, like I said, right above the cafe, or she was spending a lot of time in his house.
Didn't they say they had kind of like, it was sort of like he had an entrance. It was one one big place, and he actually lived with her, but there was like a door that kind of made it look like it wasn't quite a door for another apartment or anything, but they kind of lived together like that.
What it is, based on newspaper accounts, mm-hmm. what it is, there's a door, but the door just went out to a sitting room. And what Wes was claiming was that, like, he would occasionally, you know, have to spend the night in the apartment, but she would always sleep in the sitting room, or he would sleep in the sitting room. And come on, let's be real. That's not what's happening. But in order to protect propriety and, you know, this case, I guess we have to back up a little bit, because this case, Thelma Todd's death, it is like Fatty Arbuckle all over again. It is on every newspaper. You know, there's a lot of salacious things that are being mm-hmm. said, and it starts to take a toll on West. And, you know, to help protect, because he's a director, so to help protect what is left of his reputation, and of course Thelma's reputation, he tries to distance themselves. Unfortunately for him, Jewel Carmen, you know, will come out and insinuate their relationship is something more. But, you know, for what he was trying to do was make it sound like they just had a business partnership.
And they were best friends,
but let's be real, that's completely asinine.
Yes, it is false.
But, you know, so that his relationship with Thelma is complicated, I guess you could say that. But I guess we should jump into the death aspect.
The night of her death, yes.
Yeah. So, Saturday, December 14th, Thelma spent the day shopping with her mom. She did take a brief, you know, stop. She made a brief stop at her dentist's office while she was out shopping with her mom, because she had just had a crown put in. It was her left incisor. Mm-hmm. She had the crown put in, but she was going to have a bridge made because she had a gum disease mm-hmm. that was making her have extreme, like, tooth sensitivity, and she was having to get a bunch of dental work done. But she's buying a bunch of Christmas presents. You know, obviously this is like a week before Christmas. Well, what, 11 days before mm-hmm. Christmas. And so she's going out shopping with her mom. She's buying things for her family and friends. The police would note that when they got to her house, she had over 100 presents in her house that she was planning on sending out.
What a gal.
I know. She'd already sent out some presents on the 13th to her relatives in Lawrence, which they would actually get 4 days after Thelma had died. Mm. So she goes out with her mom. Her mom comes back to her apartment that is above the cafe, and she's chatting with her mom because she's going to a party at the Trocadero. I think I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
She's going to the party at Trocadero that is hosted actually by Stanley Lupino. Most people know actually Stanley's daughter, Ida Lupino.
She was only 15 at the time, right?
She was 15 or 16. And she, you know, really liked Thelma. She considered her to be, you know, a nice friend of hers. And obviously Ida would go on to be the only female to direct an episode of The Twilight Zone. And she had her own production company, and she really worked a lot behind the camera.
She was a really good director. Yeah.
She was, but obviously at this point, like you said, she's only like 15.
She's
16.
A kid. Yeah.
Yeah, but the idea is, you know, they're going to go to Thelma's going to go to this party. So they leave the apartment at 8. Their driver is an African-American man named Ernest Peters. And she actually has him stop at a florist off of Wilshire Boulevard. And she has him run in and buy her a flower to put on her dress. Which the flower becomes important.
Yes, it does.
But, you know, so she, you know, has him buy the flower. So then they get to the Trocadero. And originally Thelma was going to ride with her mom, Alice, who only lived a few blocks away. But when she asked the doorman at the Trocadero, you know, if all the guests are there, he says yes. So she gets out and she tells her mom goodnight, and, you know, she'll see her the next day, or at least call her. and her mom is driven to her house. Ernest Peters comes back roughly around 9 o'clock, and he is waiting for Selma to come out, obviously. The party is pretty successful. Selma does see Pat there, and he is dancing with another actress. And
Margaret Lindsay.
Yes, and they get in a little bit of a tiff. Thelma thinks that it is rude that Pat even came, especially being she's supposed to be the guest of honor. And she tells him to go apologize to Ida Lupino for coming to the party. He laughs it off. They really don't have any more interaction. But by most accounts, Thelma was actually in a pretty good mood. Roland West had requested that she be back by 2 a.m. He didn't think that she should be out as late as she tended to stay. But it was Thelma, and she had quite a bit to drink, and she was talking to Stanley Lupino about, you know, making a movie together. And she actually didn't leave until after 3 a.m.
Yeah, and this is witnessed by her limousine driver, Ernest. So they know what time she left.
Exactly. And he has to, you know, put all of his movements on a bill. I don't know if you've ever seen like the old limousine bills, but they have to put every stop and how long they waited, because then they would send this off. And of course, nothing's automated like it is now. So she gets back to the house probably around 3:30 a.m. West would recall that he heard either her dog or his dog, the story kind of vacillates, whimpering, so that he knew that Thelma was home. And this is where we get into kind of the first part of the conspiracy. There are a couple maps online of Thelma Todd's Sidewalk Cafe along with Roland West's house. I would totally recommend that people look at them. But how it is set up is there are two sets of stairs, and each, you know, stair set has like 60 stairs in it. And, goodness, my brain is not working. So Thelma's driver, Ernest, drops her off, and he sees her go up the first set of stairs, which would be to the right of her cafe. And what it is, Thelma's plan, like she had done many nights before, was to go up the stairs and go through the back door of her apartment. And she apparently found it to be deadbolted. It had been deadbolted by Roland West. He readily admitted that.
Hissy fit, yes.
And so she decides to go up to West's house, which is completely understandable. Supposedly, Thelma did not like taking the stairs, but what people tend to forget is that there was actually another way that she could have gone up, and that would have been taking Castle Lamar Drive, which really wouldn't have been that much, you know, like of an increase because of how, you know, it's laid up. It's not like it would have taken her that much extra time. So what she probably did was go up Castle Lamar Drive and turn onto a little side street named Shredo Way, which ended at Roland West's house. Now, Thelma kept her car in, you know, West's garage. So she goes up to West's house, and she finds that it also is locked.
Bolted.
Which I can't really blame. I mean, you know, obviously you want him to do things differently, but I also can't blame him for locking his house.
Yeah. He wasn't there, right? He wasn't at the house.
No, he was actually in, supposedly in Thelma's apartment. But, you know, there's arguments about all of these things, but we'll just go with the official version. He's in West's apartment. It's deadbolted. She goes up to his house, but he does have somebody who is living above his garage, actually. And that person supposedly hears her, but he thinks that she's gotten in safely, and he goes back to bed. Again, this is probably around 3:45-ish in the morning. So Thelma obviously can't get into either home. Alice and Roland both, Alice, obviously Thelma's mom, and Roland both said that Thelma was a very considerate person and she wouldn't have even thought of waking the two of them up to get into the house. So Thelma goes into the side door and parks, or I shouldn't say park, she goes into the side door and she sits in her 1932 Lincoln Fountain. And I think that it's worth pointing out that there weren't a bunch of smog checks during this time. You know, car fumes were not regulated like they are now. So the amount of carbon monoxide that this car would have produced, there's no way it would have happened today, obviously. But she sits in the car. There's theories as to whether or not she was trying to become warm or not, which, you know, that it's really only the logical theory is, you know, it was very cold outside. She turns on the car to get warm. The garage, there's like false stories that the garage door was partially open. It wasn't. She had the garage door completely closed. And she was very, very drunk. By the time they did the autopsy on her, which would have been Monday afternoon, and this is very early Saturday morning, her blood alcohol content was still 0.13.
That's amazing.
She most likely had a blood alcohol content of at least 0.17. So she is very, very inebriated. So she gets in the car, and then she passes away mostly around between 4 and 6 in the morning. And this is, you know, Sunday during the day. People are calling, asking, you know, where Thelma is. Roland West answers the phone each time, and he gives varying excuses. People have looked at this as being nefarious. Most likely it was kind of a pride thing because he thought that Thelma had gone out with her mother and was not speaking to him. And, you know, they would have spats quite a bit, especially about Thelma's partying and drinking.
Because he was not at all a party guy. How much older was he than her?
He was quite a bit older than her. I can't think of the exact number off the top of my head, but I think it was, you know, about 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, and he doesn't agree with the lifestyle she's living or anything. And, you know, he's like, well, you know, I taught her a lesson and now she's mad. Finally, probably about 10:15 in the morning, May Whitehead, who is Thelma's maid,
that's Monday morning,
pulls into Roland West. So May Whitehead pulls into the driveway like she always does. Thelma had an agreement because, as we said earlier, Thelma did not like having to walk up both flights of stairs to get to her vehicle. So May would pull into West's driveway, back out Thelma's car, put it in front of the sidewalk cafe slash, you know, Thelma's apartment. And then May Whitehead would have to walk back up the steps, you know, to go back and put her car into Roland West's garage. So May is, you know, very used to this routine. She's worked for Thelma for, you know, a while now. And she pulls her car up and she's going to pull out Thelma's car. And she noticed that Thelma is in the front seat of the Lincoln and that the door is slightly ajar. At first, May thinks that Thelma is asleep, but after she sees a little bit of blood on her mouth, she, you know, realizes something is up. May then goes down to the sidewalk cafe and calls the financial, like, guy who does, you know, all the books and everything, their accountant, who calls West, who is just in Thelma's apartment. So he's in Thelma's apartment and he quick rushes, puts on clothes, gets in Whitehead's car with her. Whitehead is so distraught that she actually misses the turn and has to flip around. And then obviously they get to West's garage. He sees her, he's freaking out, and the police are eventually called and, you know, the investigation into Thelma's death starts. Obviously, I know you want to talk a little bit about the theories behind this, Grace, and then I guess we can go into the science, like, just end this with the science part. But, you know, there's obviously mob theories. There's a theory about suicide.
Murder.
There's murder.
Or natural causes, because people are saying that she had heart disease, which was not found in her autopsy. Did her mother really say when she went there, my daughter's been murdered?
She did. She supposedly screamed out, my daughter's been murdered, which of course the press really ran with.
Of course.
Alice came out afterwards after she had was, you know, calm and everything. She came out and she said that she firmly believed it was accidental. And she had West involved in, you know, Thelma's funeral and everything. So it's very evident that she did not place any of the blame on West's feet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's also the mob connections. Making a very long story short, they're pretty much unfounded. A certain writer, you know, likes to claim that Lucky Luciano had her killed. He had never even met Thelma, and he was on the East Coast when it happened, even though she claims he was in Los Angeles. There's talks about illegal gambling and Thelma being against it. With Thelma's lifestyle, I kind of personally don't believe that she would be that aghast at the idea of having, you know, a couple, you know, craps tables or roulette, you know.
Didn't they find that she did have some sort of like little thing there?
She did, but it was just like a 10 cent game.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't anything that was like high stakes. And what they actually found when the grand jury toured through was that they were going to have like these private rooms that would be like a table in a private room, and each room would have its own, you know, decor and everything. And there were quite a few of these little rooms, and you know, there's things about that. You know, is this where people were supposed to be with their mistresses? You know, Wes would say this is where people were going to conduct business. We wanted to, you know, have like a private eatery. Whatever the case, there was no, you know, nothing was found to support that there were going to be a bunch of, you know, like
roulette tables and things like that.
Yeah. That nothing to support a gambling house was going to go above her sidewalk cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, some people have theorized that Thelma wanted to commit suicide. There was no suicide note. I don't like going off of her mood, because sometimes when people, you know, decide to commit suicide, they can actually be very happy.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. You can't be. That's no telltale. Oh, she was happy, because Ida Lupino, I believe, later testified that she was sort of melancholy that night. And yes, you're right. Sometimes when people decide to commit suicide, they become happy, because it's like, okay, it's going to be over. I made my decision, and here I am.
Exactly. And so I don't, you know, want to go off of anything with her mood off of that. However, I do think that if she was going to commit suicide, she probably would have at least left a note for her mother.
Yeah.
Because she loved her mother so much. So I think it's pretty safe to rule that, you know, aspect out. And as you said, there are also people who think she was murdered. Roland West comes up the most for this theory. There's nothing to support that Thelma was murdered. When they, you know, discovered her body, every hair was in place. She had no bruising. She, you know, had no, like, serious cuts or abrasions. So, I mean, there's nothing to suggest that he murdered her. If he knocked her out, which is the most common theory, that he knocked her out and put her in the car, she would have had some type of swelling or marking, you know.
Or bruise or something like that, yeah.
Right, and she didn't. And, you know, people seem to think that the LAPD was covering murders for Hollywood left and right, which really isn't true. But, you know, the other thing is that this case had both a coroner's inquest and a grand jury inquest, and both found that there was nothing to support that Thelma, you know, suffered from anything but an accident. And as I'm sure people can tell, I tend to agree with that.
Yeah, I want to ask you this. So this was the weirdest part, you know, that she, you know, she came home and she was in there. I can see where she gets cold, whatever. And but why not find her on why Monday at 10 a.m. that no one checks? And then Wallace Ford's wife says that Thelma, she was having a Christmas party, and Thelma called her at 4 p.m. on Sunday, you know, saying she's still going to come. Is it okay if I wear the same dress and whatever? But I don't buy that. I don't, you know, she's going to wear the same dress. She's going to come and whatever. I don't get, what do you think that was about?
So, I guess the first thing to unpack is Wallace Ford's wife. As you said, Wallace Ford's wife claims she called between 4 and 4:30, you know, saying everything you said, and that she was going to bring a mysterious stranger with her that was going to blow everyone's mind. Just off of the food and Thelma's stomach, we know that Thelma had passed away by then. And then, you know, you add on the rigor mortis and everything like that. The other thing with that story, as you said, why would she wear the dress from the previous night? That makes absolutely no sense. I would say that Ford's wife was just trying to get some sort of publicity from it. This isn't uncommon. People who are really into the Monroe community would know people like Jeannie Carmen, who, you know, these people want to get their names in the press.
Jeannie Carmen, what a book she wrote. Oh, my God. I read that when I was about 12. It was my my friend's grandmother was reading it, and I'm like, oh, my. You know, she was a trip.
She was, but you know, there's always been people who want to get off on tragedy.
Yes.
And they want to, you know, become, get some sort of popularity from it. It is noted that the police did check Thelma's phone records and found that the last call that was made to Ford's house was at 11:27 a.m. on Saturday. And it was by Mae Whitehead, who was confirming that Thelma would come to Ford's party.
And there were other sightings as well, which one was Jewel, Roland Musk's wife,
Jewel,
but she took it back.
She did. Jewel Carmen's the most famous one. She claims to have seen Thelma with a dark stranger who looked foreign, probably somebody who was either African American or Italian, based off of, you know, her description.
On Sunday afternoon.
Sunday night at almost midnight. We know that that one is, you know, impossible. Again, just going off of, you know, the autopsy results. We know that's impossible. And like you said, Jewel took it back then. There's also little people who claim to have said, like a cigar shop owner came out and said Thelma's look was a very popular look just because it was Thelma Todd.
Right.
You know, a lot of women styled themselves to look like her. They had the hair like her by 35. You know, they had somewhat improved hair dyes. You know, so I don't think that everybody was nefarious in, you know, their claims. But I do think that, you know, people underestimate just how common the Thelma Todd look was. I mean, it's very close to the Harlow look in certain aspects.
Right. And also, just think about all the Elvis sightings after, you know, the guy's dead. People forever. I mean, and James Dean, they said he became a farmer. He quit Hollywood and he had a regular life and was married for years. And all this stuff. I mean, they start rumors up the wazoo. But I don't get why she was discovered Monday. I have, you know, I believe it was an accident. And we talk about the fact that she had, was it peas and green beans or peas and carrots?
Peas and green beans.
Yes, because I've read differing opinions on that. That was still, it had not digested. And it usually 6 or 7 hours, but they said the alcohol would cause it to delay.
Right. The alcohol combined with the carbon monoxide, both factors would cause it to delay quite a bit. As to why she wasn't discovered until Sunday, I think a lot of people tend to think that, oh, it was Wes' house, so Wes must have been in there. But he actually wasn't. He was in, you know, the apartment. He's pouting because he's angry with her. you know, and it's not like Thelma never went off on stuff like this before and didn't talk to him while she was with her mother. So I can see why he's... The main thing with West is that a few people called and he, you know, sat there and was like, oh, you know, she'll be back any minute, you know, or I'm expecting her to be back soon. But this is probably just based off of past arguments that the two had had in the past, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that the thing with Thelma was, you know, she thought, you know, she was going to get yelled at by West, so she's avoiding him and he's thinking like that. And, you know, he's kind of a prideful person, so he's just like, you know, like, I'll wait till she's groveling.
Or do you think, because she was pretty drunk, and it's like, she's trying to get in the door, and then she's like, fine, and then she just kind of goes to the garage, you know, rather than being afraid of him or not wanting to get into an argument, more so that she just was like, I'll show you. Just like he was like, I'll show you kind of deal. And she went up there.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. I mean, I think that is also a possible scenario. My main thing is I don't think he sat there and knocked her out, threw her in the car and locked the door. And
me
thought, ha, ha, ha.
Either. What's interesting is, what year was it? What year? He died and he confessed to Chester Morris, who was an actor in the 30s and 40s. That he had killed her. What I would gather, see, this is my theory. I don't know if you agree with it or not. My theory is he locked her out, you know, and just let her fend for herself. She went in there, and it was, you know, he probably felt, because he locked her out and bolted her out, that he was responsible for her death. And in a way, yeah, he was, because
right.
She was not in her right mind. But at most, it was manslaughter, at most. And I think maybe he even saw her Sunday. You know, I don't know. You never know with that kind of thing, and he just couldn't
right.
deal with it.
You know, and that is possible. I actually agree with you. I think he walked her out, and, you know, I think it is very possible that she went in the car, you know, like you said, kind of as like a big, you know, like, well, screw you, dude.
Yeah.
You know, and she knew that, you know, people would be coming, you know, around in the cafe, you know, employees would arrive between 6 and 8 a.m. Again, accounts differ. But, you know, so she knew that she could just go down there and get in the house. So, you know, and like I said, he's in the cafe apartment. You know, he really has no reason to go to the house. You know, and like you said, it's possible he saw her Sunday. If there was some smoking gun that came out that said he did see her on Sunday, I wouldn't be shocked. But I also think that he probably would have called the police just because he wouldn't have wanted to deal with it. You know what I mean? For that long.
Yeah.
You know, and people tend to think, oh, you know, like... It's very easy to put our own modern lifestyle choices, you know, of how, like, most people leave their house at least once a day, you know, unless they're having some type of issue. Most people leave at least once a day. But, you know, in the 30s, it's not uncommon for him to sit there, you know, and work all day on Sunday getting prepared for next week. So, you know, they had the opening for those private rooms that we talked about earlier. That was supposed to happen on January 1st. Mm-hmm. So I think that he probably had a lot on his plate, and he really had no, like, place to go on Sunday, and he was mad at her, and, you know, she probably was mad at him. I mean, I'd be mad if I was locked out of my house.
Me too, especially if I had some drinks in me. I'd be like, how dare you? Yeah.
You know, and she's really intoxicated. Like you said, you can't really push that enough. I mean... The very lowest estimates they have for her, you know, her drug alcohol level would be 0.17, which for somebody of Thelma's size, which is, you know, a little over 5 foot and everything, that's like 6 or 7 drinks.
And that's a lot.
You know, I'm about 7 inches taller than Thelma, and I know 6 or 7 drinks, I'm, you know, 3 sheets in the wind.
Me too.
So, you know, she's a little, you know, woman. She's very petite. She's had a bunch of drinks. She's not going to make the best decisions.
It's amazing how she made it up the stairs. Those stairs are steep. They're creepy.
They, They are steep, and that's probably part of the reason that she would have been taken, you know, the going down the street instead of having to go up the second set of stairs. But, you know, people also don't realize the police did really extensive testing, and they found with her car and everything that within 2 minutes it was unbearable for, like, a man to be in there.
Wow.
You know, Thelma probably was knocked unconscious within, like, 4 minutes. We do know that she probably tried to get out of the car to save herself, but combined with alcohol and, you know, carbon monoxide, you know, starting to sex in. Combined with alcohol and carbon monoxide starting to set in, you know, she would have been pretty cloudy in her thinking. And unfortunately, when a lot of people have carbon monoxide poisoning, it makes them very sleepy. And obviously, when you are very drunk, you tend to be very sleepy. So she would have been in and out of consciousness, you know. And then there's obviously the blood. There's quite a few things that can explain that. First off, she most likely did hit, you know, her face at some point. Mm-hmm. You know, and that would have loosened her crown that she had just gotten in. But she was found upright. She wasn't found as slumped over as people think she was. But what most likely happened was she pushed on the door, which did open a little bit. Some blood did come out. We know that the blood came, you know, from... you know, her orifices, I guess you can say.
Her nose. Yeah,
because it had carbon monoxide in it. And with blood, carbon monoxide cannot attach itself to blood. It can only attach itself by going through the lungs. That's how it attaches to blood. But if you put like a drop of blood in a house full of carbon monoxide, the blood's not going to be able to absorb the carbon monoxide. You have to ingest it somehow. So she has that. There's also a thing, not to get overly graphic, but it's a term called frothing.
Yeah.
And that is when blood starts to, you know, come out of your nose or your mouth. You know, your blood doesn't coagulate as well, so you tend to bleed more. And that would explain the blood on the running board of her car, as well as a few, like, blood splatters. It's most likely the result of frothing.
Yeah, because it wasn't a lot of blood. And it does make sense. I mean, if she's passed out, she could hit the steering wheel there, whatever. She could hit something. But what I don't get is, if she tried to get out, why would she go back to the car? Wouldn't she just pass out? How could she even walk there? Well, wouldn't she just kind of like pass out in the air or something?
So she probably didn't actually get out of the car completely.
Yeah.
She probably pushed the door a little bit. It slumped. And then she was able to get herself back up to recline in the seat again correctly.
Yeah.
But, of course, the car door would shut a little bit more once her weight is not pressed against it.
Yeah.
And that would be, because the main thing was the blood on the running board, but that would perfectly explain the blood on the running board.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, when they found Thelma, her skin was bright red, which is a huge sign of carbon monoxide poisoning. When they did the autopsy, her organs were all red. As you stated earlier, she had no damage to her organs. There wasn't even a sign of the heart murmur that she had been diagnosed with. You know, so Thelma thought that she only had a few years to live, but obviously that probably would not have happened. But she had been falsely diagnosed with the heart murmur. But her organs were bright red. Her blood was described as being a deep scarlet. And her carbon monoxide blood content level was 0.7, which is huge. Most people die when their level is about 0.4.
Yeah. She had the engine stopped, yet she still had gasoline.
Yeah, so there's quite a few, like, ways to explain this. I am not a car expert, so I would probably mess it up if I tried to go into any great detail. However, in very layman's terms, which is what I need, most likely the engine stalled. And there can be multiple reasons for the engine stalling. One is that the car has so much carbon monoxide around it that there's not enough oxygen getting into the engine. There was an issue with the type of car that she had, that the engine would stall due to like something with the spark plugs. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I am not a car expert. I cannot explain it, but that was what the police went with, because that came from, you know, the time people who manufactured this Lincoln said, oh, you know, there can be an issue with the spark plugs. So the ignition will still be on, but the engine will, you know, like die.
Yeah.
And we don't know exactly how long her engine, you know, was running for. Like I said, she could have been at least unconscious with deathly levels of carbon monoxide around her within 4 minutes.
Wow.
But the engine could have run up to 45 minutes just based off of how much gasoline and stuff she had in there. It's kind of hard to say, so we don't really know. But most estimates put her death, which shouldn't be confused with her falling, you know, going unconscious, but most times put her death somewhere between like 4:30 and 6 in the morning.
Yes. Poor Thelma. And like, I don't, like I said, I don't believe it was murder. I don't believe the mob got her. I don't believe somebody smacked her and brought her up the hill. But, you know, if anyone, I believe him locking her out was not a nice thing to do. And bolting the doors because he's, you know, he's got, you know, he's a little huffy and she didn't come home when he commanded her to. So I don't know. I can see where he would make a deathbed confession thinking that. If it wasn't for him, she'd be she wouldn't be dead. But I don't believe he ever intentionally meant to harm her. It just happened. That's what happened.
Exactly. I would just say, you know, at this point, the only thing you could really charge him with, like you said, maybe manslaughter. I would just say, like, negligence.
Yes, negligent homicide or something like that.
Yeah, you know, and that, again, that would really be pushing it because at the end of the day, she's the one who was drunk who got in the car. True. I mean, people get locked out of their houses all the time. She had been locked out before and had broken a window to get into her apartment when Roland had done this to her another time. However, with how drunk she was, it probably didn't even cross her mind.
Yeah. And she was 29 years old, only 29.
She was. And like I said, her death anniversary, her birthday is coming up soon. So, you know, everyone should have a Thelma Todd day.
Yes, we should have something. A hot toddy, a cold toddy, a beer, a wine, and salute that poor girl. What I have read, though, is that some people have seen sightings of Thelma, that she is not at rest, and they have that, you know, that whole rumor that people have seen Thelma and, you know, someone like Thelma. I don't know. What did it become? It became like a soundstage, didn't it?
So it's actually become something involved with the church. That's what it is right now.
Oh.
Some church people own it, and they've owned it for quite a while. But yeah, the building went through quite a few changes over the years, but they have kept it structurally sound.
And the garage as well is now storage space.
Yeah. The main thing is that every once in a while somebody will threaten to tear down the home, and of course people go against that. So that's, you know, that's always a concern. So if anyone ever sees, you know, save Thelma Todd's house, you know, or save the sidewalk cafe, people should definitely do that.
Yeah, and it is, like she said, Google it, look it up, see the stairs, see the whole background, see the whole setup, and you get a good idea of the whole thing. And Thelma was an amazing woman, of course, a platinum blonde, like Jean, another one who had a very tragic death, which stinks, and it seems to be the link with a lot of these poor women. Do blondes have more fun? For a while, but then not quite. I don't know. Anyway, our next blonde will be April.
It's going to be the fabulous Mae West.
Who doesn't love Ha? She was quite the bombshell up till her death at, how old is she, 85?
Oh, yeah, she was about a... Let's see. Yeah, she would have been about up there.
Yeah, and I taped Myra Breckinridge, so I'm going to catch that before we start talking about May.
Oh, Yeah, no, you should definitely catch Sextet. In fact, I highly recommend everybody watch Sextet. It's on YouTube.
And yes.
It's his last movie, and Ringo Starr's in it.
Yes. And all those men who are falling at her feet, and Timothy Dalton, and the whole nine yards. It's a great film. I have to rewatch it. Okay, so April, I think we did her justice. We had a couple weird incidents while we were doing this podcast, and it's like, I've never had this during my podcast. She, not with her, so it's so weird, but I don't think Thelma would have been mad what we were saying. We were just nice, peaceful.
I don't think so. Maybe it was Roland getting mad at us.
Perhaps.
We were on.
Perhaps. Sorry, Roland. Anyway, thank you so much, April. I am going to be posting Jean Harlow this Tuesday, you know, sometime before noon. And then the following Tuesday, I'll be posting Thelma. This is when you guys will be listening to it. And April, you are wonderful as usual. And thank you so much for coming on. Can't wait to talk to you about our May. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you so much, April. You're the best. You really are.
Thanks, Grace. So are you. I'm excited for next week.
Me too. Talk to y'all later. Bye.
The club with his pants falling down, or the dance that's a dream of romance, or the scene where the villain is mean. That's entertainment. The life on the lady in tights, or the bride with the guy on the side, or the ball where she gives him her all. That's entertainment. It might be a fight like you see on the screen, a swain getting slain for the love of a queen, some great Shakespearean scene where a ghost and a prince meet, and everyone ends in mincemeat. The gag may be waving the flag that began with the Mr. Cohan. Hip hooray, the American way. The world is a stage. The stage is a world of entertainment.